Hello, this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 28, 2020. We'll start today's reading with Black History Month, Part of Something Bigger. Millikan students share message of service, community at BOM event, Decatur. Students at BOM School heartily approved of the music the sorority and fraternity members from Millikan University chose for their step performance on Thursday. As each song began playing, the kids gave a collective ooh sound in the back, and the older girls sang along until they got the giggles. BOM celebrated Black History Month on Thursday with the visit from Millikan students and presentations from BOM students who had studied famous figures from history. The band performed a jazz number. The first grade gave a reader's theater performance. The kindergartners sang songs about Martin Luther King Jr. and Rosa Parks that were set to the tunes of O Christmas Tree and Jingle Bells. And some of the third grade students read summaries of what they'd learned about King, Parks, Jackie Robinson, and Ruby Bridges. Principal Tanya Young closed the assembly with another round of applause for the band especially. Jazz music is hard to play, she told the students. They did really well, especially for still being in elementary school. A major highlight of the event, however, was the college students, who talked about their historically Black organizations are devoted how their historically Black organizations are devoted to sisterhood, brotherhood, and service. Young herself is a lifetime member of Alpha Kappa Alpha, founded in 1908. Their signature color is salmon pink, which Nikyla Mitchell, treasurer of the Tau Iota chapter, wore to the assembly. Young said she bumps into members all over the country. Every time she does, at a conference or in an airport or wherever it is, it's like bumping into an old friend, even if they've never met before. I was in a very large university, the University of Maryland, Young said. I wanted a sense of belonging, and I'd been doing community service since high school, so I decided to check out organizations, and that's the one I decided on. There were 16 young women in the group that went through the membership process with her then, Young said. And to this day, the 13 surviving members of that group stay in touch, see each other regularly, and are a second family. Millikan Senior Jocarla Anderson Sorority, Delta Sigma Theta, was founded in 1913 at Howard University. Members are committed to the development of college-educated women and public service, she said. I knew that I wanted to become part of something bigger than myself, Anderson said. I knew Deltas were big on public service, and I wanted to continue and have the opportunities. You can travel anywhere in the world. We have chapters all over the world and in every single state. Mitchell, a sophomore, said members of her sorority helped her move in on her first day at Millikan and have been supportive and truly like sisters ever since. The members of Alpha Phi Alpha, a men's fraternity founded at Cornell University in 1906, wore black jackets, and each had letters and numbers on the back that mean something specific to the member wearing it, said Kayvon Evans, a junior at Millikan. We develop leaders from our brotherhood, academic excellence, and provide service and advocacy to our communities, Evans said. We believe in giving back and persuading kids to do the right thing. Go to school, go to college, be the best person they can be as an individual, whether they are male or female, he said. And the pictures that accompany this on page 2, it shows the members of the Millikan University's Alpha Phi Alpha performing a step routine on Thursday during an assembly for Black History Month at BOM School. And in the picture, all of the young gentlemen are in the air. No one's foot is touching the ground. So that picture was snapped at the right moment. And on the front page, it shows first grader Nalia Cooper cheering during a dance routine from Millikan University students on Thursday during an assembly for Black History Month at BOM School. And you can see more photos at herald-review.com. No public safety, no refusal DUI policy adopted. Authorities to seek warrants for immediate blood testing, Decatur. Law enforcement agencies, prosecutors, and judges in Macon County plan to work together to implement a no-refusal program which allows police to seek search warrants for blood tests of people suspected of driving under the influence. Decatur Police and Macon County Law Enforcement Agencies released a joint statement Thursday announcing the program, under which they would draw blood from people arrested for DUI who do not voluntarily submit to breath or blood tests. They said the program will initially be limited to Class 2 felony or higher aggravated DUI arrests, which the agencies described as the most dangerous DUI offenders. It could be expanded to lower-level offenses in the future. After the program's announcement Thursday morning, some criticism emerged on social media, with opponents characterizing the measure as an abuse of power. Law enforcement officials told the Herald and Review that the program does not violate citizens' constitutional rights. If your family was victim of a DUI crash, I would think you would want law enforcement to do all they could to gather evidence and hold the offender accountable, Decatur Deputy Police Chief Shane Brandel said in an email. It is well established in law that no refusal programs are legal and not a violation of a person's rights when administered within legal guidelines. Brandel said it is routine to obtain search warrants for suspects in criminal offenses. The Herald and Review in December reported law enforcement agencies planned to continue their use of blood tests to determine cannabis impairment. The tests are generally used in combination with field sobriety tests. Only officers trained in forensic phlebotomy and medical professionals can take blood samples, according to Decatur police officials. Determining whether a driver has been impaired by marijuana is more complex than determining whether he or she is drunk. Local law enforcement officials say blood tests are the most accurate way to determine cannabis impairment, but there is a time element involved. Experts say THC levels are highest in people right after they finish smoking marijuana and decline significantly in the following 2 hours. Additionally, frequent marijuana users can exhibit persistent levels of the drug long after use. Greg Fombell, who has practiced law for over 20 years and primarily handles DUI cases, said there were constitutional issues with the program. The issue always is, what is unreasonable? That is where the Constitution left us with some vagueness, said Fombell, a member of the National College for DUI Defense. It doesn't say free from all searches. It says unreasonable searches. How it works. The no refusal program already existed in Macon County and was implemented on weekends chosen at random by law enforcement. In the past, Decatur police officials sent out press releases notifying the public that they could not refuse testing during the designated weekends. Now it will be enforced daily, though, at least for now, only on Class 2 felonies or aggravated DUI cases, which Brandel said generally involve crashes that result in injury or death. The idea isn't unique to Macon County. In Illinois, McHenry and Boone counties instituted no-refusal programs in 2018, turning to e-warrants that could be sent to a judge to review electronically right from a traffic stop. Some jurisdictions in other states have introduced similar initiatives. The Illinois limit for driving impairment from cannabis is 5 nanograms per milliliter of blood, or 10 nanograms per milliliter of other bodily fluids such as saliva or urine. Illinois State Police will continue to use saliva testing to detect THC, but Macon County and Decatur law enforcement officials say they are taking a different route because blood tests are more accurate. As of December, 10 officers in the state had such training, 4 of which are in Macon County, 2 of them being Decatur police officers. 3 officers from the Decatur Police Department will be trained this summer. Brandle said, and another class will be offered in January 2021. Five officers at the department will double as trained forensic phlebotomists after August. Prosecutors and judges are on call to process search warrants electronically, Macon County State's Attorney J. Scott said. For example, prosecutors switch off taking week-long 24-hour shifts. Scott said the program in no way violates constitutional rights of citizens. It is clearly not a violation of anyone's Fourth Amendment rights, Scott said. We are well within the law to do this. Larry Brooks, Decatur Master Patrol Officer, who is trained in forensic phlebotomy, previously told the Herald and Review that blood tests give the most accurate read for THC levels. The saliva tests are not consistent, Brooks previously said, and we've had people actually dose with cannabis in front of us, and then they'll show up negative on those saliva tests. But Fombell said blood tests are flawed in that they are not only unreliable, but are also invasive. There is so much opportunity for human error when processing the blood samples, which are invasive to retrieve to begin with, he said. Reclaim the ballot, Speaker urges. Carson among Black History Month honorees at Capitol event, Springfield. The Reverend Courtney Carson's work in education and mentoring of young people earned state recognition Thursday as he was honored during a Black History Month ceremony at the Capitol. Treasurer Michael Frericks presented Carson, a member of the Decatur Board of Education and administrator at Richland Community College, and six other high-achieving Black Illinoisans with awards. Other recipients included political and labor leaders, a local business owner, and a professional athlete. Speakers during the ceremony celebrated Black history and urged the fight for equality to continue. This is a critical turning point in our state's and country's history, said keynote speaker Jamal Wright, president of Eureka College outside Peoria. We have a responsibility to make our votes count and our voices heard. Wright, who became the college's first Black and female president in 2017, reflected on the importance of voting rights more than half a century after the civil rights movement. While there was deeply rooted racism and resistance in the South, Wright said, Illinois' history is one of leading from the front in terms of voting rights, coalition building, and electing African Americans to office. She said this election year is a chance for Black voters to reclaim the ballot, paying homage to famed civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr.'s Give Us the Ballot speech from 1957. Reclaim the ballot because we understand that our fight isn't only a Black fight, it's not only a woman's fight. This is a justice fight, she said, a fight for the value of civil discourse, respect for humanity, and empowerment of the innovative spirit. Carson made national headlines in 2017 when he was elected to the board of the school district that expelled him in 1999. He was one of the Decatur 7 high school students whose fight at a football game and subsequent expulsions brought Jesse Jackson and the Rainbow Push Coalition to town and put Decatur into the national news. He turned his life around and now works to help young people develop opportunities and avoid pitfalls. I believe that education extends itself outside the classroom and into the heart of the community, Carson said. Carson is now a Baptist preacher, vice president of the school board, and director of essential skills and community relations at Richland. He works to raise awareness of education and poverty issues affecting minorities. Where I come from, I see historical patterns of poverty, which restricts certain populations to access to prosperity. He said, I feel that I'm called by God to fight the objective conditions that hurt, harm, and hinder our students' educational experience. Another well-known recipient in Central Illinois was Malik Turner, a graduate of Springfield Sacred Heart Griffin High School and the University of Illinois, who is a wide receiver for the NFL's Seattle Seahawks. He said he wants to give back to the community that helped him achieve his goals. I hope to accomplish things not just on the field, but off the field. And with the platform I'm given, hopefully I can be seen in this community as more than just an athlete, Turner said. Also receiving awards were State Representative Jehan Gordon Booth, a Democrat from Peoria, Nikita Richards, a Bloomington resident who serves on the Illinois Council on Women and Girls, Bonnie Hester, who represents AFSCME, Union Retirees on the West Central Illinois Labor Council Board, Maurice Bridges, a U.S. Air Force veteran who works with fellow veterans at the Veterans Foreign Wars, and Andrew Sforza, a barbershop owner in Springfield. Richards is a U.S. Navy veteran and Chicago native who advocates for the health and safety of young people. She spoke about the importance of empowering young Black women. None of what we're doing is for ourselves, she said, and we shouldn't keep it to ourselves. I pray that we all think about the next generation of leaders as we continue this great work. The annual celebration, organized by the Treasurer's Office, is held in the Capitol Rotunda, which Frerich said serves a symbolic purpose. This is a building that belongs to all residents of the state, he said. That is where these stories should be heard. Perhaps someone walking through here who did not simply come out for Black History Month celebration will hear about some of the accomplishments of our honorees today, Frerich continued. In hearing their stories, maybe there might be a group of kids passing through who realize all the different areas where they can succeed. Black History Month traces its beginnings to 1926, when Black historian Carter Woodson started Negro History Week. It was observed during the second week of February to coincide with the birthdays of President Abraham Lincoln and abolitionist Frederick Douglass. The first month-long celebration of what has become Black History Month was held in 1970 by a group of Black students at Kent State University in Ohio. It was officially recognized as national celebration in 1976 by President Gerald Ford. And in more local and state news on page A3, case made for MAP funding, ballooning cost of college, diminishing grants, buying power. Springfield. The state commission that oversees higher education grants for low-income students detailed the diminishing buying power of state financial aid Thursday during a budget request hearing. Eric Zarnikow, executive director for the Illinois Student Assistance Commission, spent much of his testimony before a Senate Appropriations Committee breaking down the state's monetary award program grants, which apply to tuition and fees. The grants are available to eligible Illinois residents who demonstrate financial need and attend approved Illinois colleges, and they do not need to be repaid. MAP really does meet today's low-income Illinois students where they are, and it gets aid to the people that need it most, Zarnikow said, later noting that MAP recipients graduate at about the same rate as other students enrolled at the same university. This year, 54% of MAP recipients have no parent who graduated college, and 53% come from families that are judged by the federal government as having no money to contribute to the cost of higher education. According to ISAC, 59% of Black undergraduates, 45% of Hispanic undergraduates, and 55% of multiracial undergraduates, and 21% of white undergraduates receive MAP funding. That program received a $50 million increase for the current fiscal year, which ends June 30th, bringing its total state allotment up to $451 million. In his budget proposal for next year, Governor J.B. Pritzker proposed an additional $50 million to the program. The second straight increase is part of an effort by Pritzker to increase MAP funding by 50% over a four-year span. Zarnikau called the proposed funding spike a critical investment in the program, which is often the only avenue for low-income students to attend college, but added it is still not fully funded. In 2001, Zarnikau said ISAC had enough MAP funding to serve everybody who was eligible for the program. At that time, grants would have covered 100% of a student's tuition and fees at public universities or community colleges. In 2020, that number is at just 34% at universities and 36% at community colleges. The $50 million funding increase has helped, he said, as it is estimated that by the time fiscal year 2020 ends on June 30th, the state will have served about 10,000 more students than it did the previous year. The average MAP grant allotment per student will have increased by about $260 as well. Still, this will have left about 50,000 MAP-eligible students cut off from funding, Zarnikau said, although only about half of that number would have been expected to accept the funding. Ballooning college education costs are one reason the state has seen an erosion of purchasing power over time, Zarnikau said. Pritzker's proposed budget also calls for 15% of MAP funding, or $75 million total, to be set aside for community colleges, which Zarnikau said should be enough to cover tuition and fees for all eligible community college students when combined with available federal grants. Zarnikau also informed legislators that a federal grant program providing for the administration costs of ISAC is being phased out, creating a need for greater state funding. Police. Bad word prompts beating. Moroa. Police say a Moroa woman, outraged after her 7-year-old grandson used a 4-letter swear word in front of her, open hand smacked the boy across the mouth 12 times, leaving a bleeding wound to his torn lip. A sworn affidavit from the Moroa Police Department quotes an unnamed witness as saying the 56-year-old grandmother wasn't done with her physical discipline of the child, who has autism, and what a parent described as the mindset of a 4-year-old. The witness also indicated the grandmother then spanked the child with enough force to buckle the child's legs, said Moroa Police Officer Tyler Jenkins. The witness then stated that she grabbed the back of the child's hooded sweatshirt near the neck area and lifted the child off the ground. The witness stated that this caused choking to the child, and the child was thrown onto a chair. Jenkins said the alleged assault took place at 6:30 a.m. Tuesday while the woman was watching the boy in her home. The officer said he examined the child afterward and noted his injured upper lip with abrasions around the neck and upper jaw area. After interviewing the grandmother, she admitted to striking the child on the mouth and buttocks and grabbing the child by a sweatshirt, added Jenkins. The grandmother was booked on a preliminary charge of aggravated domestic battery. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. A check of Macon County jail records show the grandmother is free on bail set at $20,000, which means she posted $2,000 to be released. Prosecutors had asked for bail set at $40,000. Her bail conditions order her to stay away from her grandson. Senior exemption forms available. Decatur, Macon County's 2020 Senior Citizen Assessment Freeze exemption forms are now available at most area banks, credit unions, libraries, or post offices on the county's website at co.macon.il.us. Again, that's co.macon.il.us or at the Macon County Supervisor of Assessments office at 141 South Main Street, Suite 401. Again, that's at the Macon County Supervisor of Assessments office at 141 South Main, Suite 401. Those needing assistance may bring 2019 income information to the assessor's office to verify eligibility and get help completing the paperwork. For more information, visit co.macon.il.us/supervisor-assessments.php. Again, that's co.macon.il.us/supervisor-assessments.php or call 217-424-1364, 424-1364. Decatur man denies two counts of sexual assault. Philip R. Woods is pleading not guilty to charges he raped a Decatur woman at gunpoint. Woods, 52, appeared in Macon County Circuit Court on Wednesday, denying two counts of committing aggravated criminal sexual assault. The offense dates to the night of May 2nd, and Woods, who was arrested January 30th, remains in custody at the Macon County Jail, with bail set at $200,000, which means he must post $20,000 to be released. Judge Phoebe Bowers found probable cause to try Woods at Wednesday's hearing and put the case on the trial call of fellow Judge Thomas Griffith. A pre-trial hearing was scheduled for April 7th. Earlier, giving evidence, Decatur police officer Joshua Davis said the victim described that a man she later identified as Woods, who claimed to know her boyfriend, had offered her a lift the night of the alleged assault at 11:30 p.m. Questioned on the evidence by law school intern Anna Rich, acting under the supervision of First Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Nicole Kroenke, Davis said the woman described being taken to Woods' apartment on East Center Street. Did she advise the male pulled a handgun and pointed it at her, telling her to remove her clothing? Rich asked. Yes, Davis replied. The terrified victim then described to police being raped at gunpoint on a sofa before being forced by Woods to take a shower after the assault. Did she comply with the demand because she feared he would use the gun on her? Asked Rich. Yes, said Davis. The woman later recognized Woods after seeing his picture in a social media profile and was able to identify him from a digital lineup of suspects. Woods was arrested after police obtained DNA results from forensic testing. Defense attorney Dave Ellison raised several points when his turn came to question Davis. Ellison noted the incident was not reported until 12 days later and asked the officer if there had been any witnesses who could corroborate the woman's version of the events. No, not that I am aware of, Davis replied. The sexual assault case is now one of four cases Woods has pending. He appeared in court January 9th and pleaded guilty in separate causes to retail theft, unlawful possession of illegal drugs, and residential burglary. Sentencing has been delayed while Woods was considered for participation in the county's drug court, which allows people with substance abuse issues to get help and gives them a chance to avoid incarceration. He's due back for a hearing on the issue on March 27th. And a picture on this page shows a bitty ball in Decatur. And the top picture is that the Boys and Girls Club youth basketball coach A.J. Madison high-fives Mackenzie Austin after a bitty basketball league game Thursday at the Boys and Girls Club of Decatur. The league is a collaboration between the Decatur Family YMCA and the Boys and Girls Club. And the picture on the left shows spectators and team members cheering the players on the floor. And the right is Leighton Lathoff left, attempts to avoid defender Summer Bond. We'll take a short break now from the first half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated February 28th, 2020. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.